Thank you very much. I'd just like to begin by saying, at the time of this research and the submission of the abstract, I was associate professor at Queen's University, the School of Kinesiology and Health Studies. Just recently relocated. Not able to hear me? Just recently relocated to the University of South Carolina. You can hear me now? Okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. So the data for this particular study come from the Montreal Neighborhood Networks and Healthy Aging Study. It was funded by the Canadian Institute for Health Research, the Institute of Aging. I'd also like to acknowledge some of the co-principal investigators on this particular project. These include mainly University of Montreal-based researchers, Lise Gauvin, Yen Kestens, Lucy Richard, Kate Froelich, and Mark Daniel at the time. In addition, Alf Buchenholt was with the University of McGill at that time. So, but blood pressure, high blood pressure is recognized as the leading risk factor for the global for global disease. This was in the recent Global Burden of Disease studies. 6 million Canadians, or roughly 1 in 5 adults, have hypertension in Canada, compared to the U.S., where the prevalence is estimated at about 1 in 3, or 33%. So in this particular study, I wanted to look at the role of network social capital and whether it could impact the likelihood of having hypertension prospectively. Here I define network social capital specifically as the resources to which individuals have access through their social networks. And if you're familiar with the social capital literature, there are numerous definitions and different measures that are used to talk about and look at the impacts of social capital and health outcomes. Here I'm really using a very specific definition. Now, other cross-sectional studies looking at more social relational factors, interpersonal level variables have, for example, looked at social integration. Oftentimes this is measured more generally as a particular number of individuals that someone might have connections to, but not specifically, if you will, a formal network measure. Social support has also been linked to hypertension in cross-sectional analyses, as well as a study that I did with some co-authors a few years ago looking at network social capital and hypertension in just using the cross-sectional data of this particular sample. Now, prospectively as well, social integration has been linked to hypertension. Now, most of the times when we think, what are the physiological mechanisms by which social capital or social relationships might, in that turn of the phrase, get under the skin, stress and chronic stress or anticipatory stress are often recognized as important mediators or potential moderators to the impact of social relationships on hypertension. Now, what I then wanted to ask in this particular study is, does network social capital help reduce the odds of developing hypertension over a 2-year period? So our sample, as I said before, comes from the Montreal Neighborhood Networks and Healthy Aging study. For the Wave 1 sample, we stratified the Montreal Metropolitan Census Tracts, and this was 2005. There were 862 census tracts. So we stratified those by median household income. So we had tertiles of low, middle, high-income census tracts. And from each of those tertiles, we selected 100 tracts so that we could really get a range of different neighborhood environments across the Montreal metropolitan area. So as you see in this particular map, this is a map of the Montreal metropolitan area. Do I have a pointer up here? No? Well, as you can see here, this is the Montreal Island. This is Laval. This is the North Shore, and this is the South Shore. The darker blocked areas are areas with lower median household income. So from selecting these census tracts, within each census tract we stratified by age. So we were looking to recruit 3 households that would be from 25 to 44, 3 households from 45 to 64, and then 3 households 65 and up. And the reason for that and for this particular study is we wanted to be able to look at neighborhood effects over the course of a lifespan. So we wanted to make sure we oversampled older adults so that we'd be able to look more closely at neighborhood effects on aging. Now, we had a response rate then of roughly 38.7%. So for this particular sample, though, for this particular study, I'm going to use the Wave 2 data as well. And for that, with the Wave 2 and the follow-up, we had 1,400 participants from those originals, 2,707 participate in Wave 2. So it's for a participation rate of roughly 51.7%. We still had the same geographical spread, however, as you can see, we still had 300 census tracts that were a part of our wave two sample. Now, for hypertension, we simply asked, since this was more of a population-based study, spanning a large geographical area, and financially the means wasn't there to do direct measures of hypertension, but for this study, we simply asked respondents whether a doctor had ever told them that they had hypertension or high blood pressure. For this particular sample, at wave one, that prevalence was roughly 24.7%, and that's a little bit over the Canadian average, but as I said before, we did oversample older adults in this particular study. So for these analyses, then, we wanted to exclude those that were already diagnosed or said that they had been diagnosed with hypertension at wave one. Okay, so they were just looking from wave one, who did not have hypertension, to wave two if they somehow developed hypertension. So we excluded roughly 330 participants from our wave two sample. Okay. For our network social capital measure, we use what's called a position generator. And if you're familiar with that area, this position generator was developed by the sociologist Nan Lin, who I think is retired at Duke University. And as you can see in this particular diagram here, the social pyramid, there are critical aspects theoretically to his model of network social capital. These include the fact that in terms of social stratification, individuals that are going to have lower social economic status per se aren't going to have the same type of access to resources as those in higher socioeconomic position. So that the resources may not be for higher socioeconomic status individuals, resources may or may not play as great of a role because they have financial means, per se, to access resources, not necessarily having to use or mobilize their social networks in that way. So for our position generator, Nan Lin suggests the creation of three different types of dimensions of social capital using this instrument. The first is diversity, which is roughly, I should take a step back. The position generator asks individuals if they have, if they know someone on a first name basis who has or holds a certain occupation in society. So for example, do you know a taxi driver? Do you know a physician? Do you know a high school teacher? And the meaning of that is so that you can get a picture of the spectrum of someone's social capital, again, across this sort of socioeconomic profile. So recommended is to use diversity, which would simply be the number of different individuals someone is identified in the position generator. The reach, so what is the highest occupation that, in terms of occupational prestige, that you might be able to access with your social networks. And then finally, the range, so just the difference between the highest occupation accessed and the lowest in terms of prestige. Now, for these analyses, we also adjusted for a range of socio-demographic and economic factors, including educational attainment, household income, foreign-born status, age, gender. We also adjusted for BMI, as it's calculated using self-reports of height and weight. And for these analyses as well, we use a multi-level logistic regression because, as I said before, our sampling design was based on a clustered sampling model. There wasn't a lot of clustering, per se, of hypertension, however. So what did we find? So in terms of hypertension from the from 2008 to 2010, again, this is just looking at from wave one to wave two, 8% of that sample over the two-year period reported then that they had hypertension in 2010. In terms of our sample, again, this is 63%, roughly 63% of the wave two were women. We had already, if you look at some of our publications around the cross-sectional data, the survey itself overrepresented women. Women were more likely to reply to the to our questionnaire than men. Network social capital here, this is based on a factor analysis of those diversity range and reach values. You can see at 0.11, it's actually a little bit higher than at wave one, which would be roughly around the around zero. So you can see in this particular sample, if you look at wave two, people that had higher network social capital were more likely to respond to this particular survey and take part in wave two. We also had roughly 60% of our sample were 55 years and older. And then in terms of educational attainment, high school or less, about 30%. If you know Montreal, Montreal is generally a well-educated city. There are a number of colleges and universities within a very small, dense area. So what we found then is that network social capital did in fact reduce the chances of the odds of having hypertension at wave two, so just in that two-year period. You can see that in terms of the first value here reported, network social capital. We also found that the women were less likely to have a hypertension than the men in the study. Age, as you might expect, was also, if as you increased in age, the more likely you were to report hypertension. And then our BMR, self-reported height and weight figure, also aligned with what you would expect. That is, people with higher BMI were more likely to report having hypertension in 2010. Now, so in terms of answering that question, what we've shown then, of course, is that network social capital did reduce the odds of developing hypertension in that two-year period. Now, to try to understand a bit of what social capital or network social capital might represent here, in a paper we did in Journal Epidemiology Community Health, we decomposed social capital inequalities in hypertension using simply the wave one data, the 2,707 sample. What we found there to understand what makes what are the differences in social capital represent in terms of hypertension, this particular diagram, you can see that it's picking up here. I'll come back to this age aspect. Okay, so at the age of 65, this is an important shift in terms of people's network social capital and their likelihood of having hypertension. Economic factors are also playing a role in terms of trying to understand the variability in social capital and hypertension, as well as some network effects, particularly around social isolation. So what I'd posit here is, we have to think about the isolation component, the economic component, as well as being the socioeconomic component, as well as picking up dimensions of how it is that network social capital may be operating to influence hypertension. As I said before, that at 65, this is an important shift, particularly in our sample, because we do have older adults, the retirement period. If you're familiar with this literature, it's very important in terms of changes in both the composition of someone's social networks. For example, you might start to rely more closely on family and friends rather than acquaintances. And also in terms of the size of your network, oftentimes your network might reduce in size, particularly as you leave the workforce. And then also the fact that geographically your networks might become more spatially circumscribed. What we find, though, if we think more carefully about, what is network social capital representing, I'd point to the idea of diversification, if you're familiar with some of the work of Mark Granovetter, the sociologist here. The idea of weak ties being an important component to how it is that people feel socially integrated, their access to resources, not just within their own small or their closer social circles, but how those how network diversity might give people access to resources across social groupings. So, if you will, kind of a bridging capital. Finally, in terms of thinking about, again, the physiological mechanisms, stress and chronic stress might be potential moderators or mediators in this relationship, although we didn't have those particular measures for this study. So just a couple limitations to think about as recognizing the findings here. First, as we only modeling two time points with hypertension, there could be some misreporting in our sample in terms of the wave two or the wave one. We did have a change in our composition of our sample from wave one to wave to two. That is, it also became older adults were less likely to participate in wave two. Again, women were still more likely to participate. French-speaking Montrealers were more likely to participate in wave one and in wave two. We didn't have physiological stress measures to test more of a mediating model here. And this is really focused specifically on urban-dwelling adults in a very dense urban environment, even though we do capture some of the more of the suburbs of Montreal. And I would put to you that, when we're thinking particularly about social networks and social capital in rural areas, again, that might be a more heightened sense of the importance of family and kin here. So what I'm saying applies in the context of an urban environment may not be as applicable in more of a rural setting. So here's some key references. I know I'm not expecting you to write these down now, but I do have the handouts available through the conference website. So if you're interested in these references, they're available there. So thank you.